Preacher and Antoine Revier were in the center of the Cheyenne camp, spread-eagled and staked to the ground. They had been stripped of their clothing and moccasins. A tidal surge of pain churned in Preacher's head. Through it, he vaguely heard a stirring beyond his bare feet. A blurred figure came into view, and Preacher tried to blink his eyes into focus. Finally, the image came clear.
Swift Bear?
It is truly you, White Ghost?
Yeah, it is, Swift Bear. Your warriors caught me fair and square.
With that admission, Preacher set out on a plan that had only begun to form in his mind. It was one he hoped would save their lives.
Look, you know me, Swift Bear, and you know I don't lie. I sure would feel better if I was sitting upright so I could talk to you like a man, instead of a deer laid out for dressing. Could you do that for me, Swift Bear?
Since it is you, I shall allow it. Release his arms.
The rawhide thongs were severed. Preacher flexed his fingers to restore feeling and levered himself into a sitting position.
White Ghost, thanks, Swift Bear. Now, what you got here is two fellows who've been friends to the Cheyenne for many winters. Why, even took me a Cheyenne wife, had two sons by her. Except she got took by the sickness.
The white man's curse.
Yeah, smallpox. There was nothing that could be done about it. But my boys are being raised to Cheyenne in the band of Cloud Blanket. It is as the Great Spirit sees best. But what I'm getting at is, since we're friends more or less, maybe you'd cut us loose and let us go on our way?
We are a war party, and I have a band of my own now. I no longer listen to the words of Cloud Blanket.
You two at odds, huh? That's a shame. What happened?
Cloud Blanket turned away from the Iron Shield Society.
What's that?
A new warrior society with powerful medicine. It was brought to us by Blackfoot Shaman.
Oh yeah, Iron Shirt. Yeah, but Iron Shirt doesn't speak for the Cheyenne. Now that I know for a fact. And I don't think he speaks for Swift Bear.
We follow him in the great battle.
What battle is that?
To rid our land of the white men. Iron Shirt leads us.
But he doesn't tell you what to do with a friend.
No, that is so. But true though it is, you were spying on a war camp. I cannot simply release White Ghost.
Uh-huh. But there is a way, though, isn't there?
You could fight your way free.
You mean take on the whole mess of you?
No. But if you could fight your way past 10 warriors, you could possibly go on your way in peace.
What about my friend? He looks a mite worse for wear. Could I fight for his release, too?
You would have to better four hands of men for that. Or you could fight one man to the death.
I'd have to fight any man you send against me.
Swift Bear nodded.
If I win, means my friend goes free and unharmed.
That is so. And if you do not defeat my choice, let us hope you both die like men.
What weapons will we use?
That will be decided by the council tonight.
Who will I fight?
Swift Bear remained silent, letting his gaze roam over the gathered warriors. Then he made a gesture that summoned an important-looking Blackfoot. The two spoke away from Preacher, too quietly to hear. When they had decided, Swift Bear returned to Preacher.
I have asked my brother, Three Horses, who he thinks could uphold our honor. He has suggested that it would be fitting for Tall Bull to claim your scalp. Tall Bull is a Blackfoot, one who has taken the way of Iron Shirt and is immune to the weapons of the white man.
Well, then I don't think pistols would be a fair choice for weapons. I need at least a little chance to win.
You will learn of our decision tomorrow. When the sun is high, the fight will begin.
Preacher and Antoine spent an uneasy night. In the chill mountain air, they soon found themselves stiffening and had to clench their jaws to keep their teeth from chattering. Tied to the trunks of a pair of saplings, they couldn't even lay out full length to sleep. When morning came, their muscles had grown knotted and sore. Swift Bear ordered them cut loose, and while food was brought to them, they worked out the kinks. They were kept under control by rawhide tethers around their waists. Preacher ate with his usual appetite a stew made of some sort of meat he could not identify. Then he began to exercise lightly. Relentlessly, the sun climbed the sky while Preacher continued to stretch, bend, and run in place. All the while, he tried to think through a strategy to ensure he'd win. When he worked up a light sheen of sweat and his muscles seemed as smooth an operation as usual, he stopped and sat beside Antoine.
You remember old Keep? He had to fight for his life one time like this, against the Arapaho, I believe. Too bad it killed him.
Yeah, that's a fact. How about French Jake, though? He came through it missing only three fingers in one hand.
True. How about Jim Bridger? He ran afoul of some Paiutes. They were fixed to torture him and burn him alive. Only he talked them into a fight. Best man wins all. You know the Paiutes are sneaky. He had to fight three men before they kept their word. He killed all three. And he did it with only getting a couple of light cuts on his arms. And the loss of one eye.
Whole eye, huh?
Oui. You sound like you're starting to regret this fight already.
Now that you mention it, maybe I am.
You want out of it?
I want out of here. And the only way to do that is to go through with this fight.
You could have said no.
Yeah, and we'd be dead by now. No, that's not for this boy. I plan on living a whole long time after this affair.
We've had some good times, haven't we, Preacher?
Hey, you ain't going soft-hearted on me, are you, Antoine?
Not me, mon ami. I was only thinking...
About what?
We know of more men that failed to get through such an ordeal than those that did. I feel responsible in a way. It is as though if I had not been alone, you might have gotten away.
Nonsense, my friend. You didn't cause this. I failed to keep careful watch. They found us and nabbed us, and here we are. But I think I figured a way out for us, and, well, it'd be crazy to expect that I'll not get hurt some in the process.
Vale bon Dieu, Preacher. You have more sands than any 10 men I know. God go with you.
Thank you, Antoine.
Before they even expected it, the time arrived for the mortal combat. Swift Bear and four of his warriors came for Preacher. Two of them escorted Antoine Revier, while the other pair accompanied Preacher. They led Preacher to a circle of grass that had been stamped down, forming a crude ring. Then they released the tether and stepped back. Preacher watched one of the largest Indians he had ever seen in his life step into the ring with him.
You will die slow, tiny white man.
God damn. No wonder they call you Tall Bull.
His name suited him to perfection. He towered well over 6 feet. With thick muscles and tree trunk legs. His hands were the size of grizzly paws, and his head would not fit the largest hat size. He had Preacher by 5 inches and a good 55 pounds. Swift Bear came forward and handed each man a knife and a tomahawk. Relief coursed through Preacher when he found that the weapons were his own. Then the Cheyenne chief stepped back and motioned for the contestants to face him.
This is a fight to the death! You will use no other weapons than those given you. If you lose both, you may use hands, feet, and teeth. It is in the hands of the Great Spirit and your skill to decide who will win.
With that, Swift Bear melted back to the outer edge of the ring and raised his arm.
Let the fight begin!
Warily, the two fighters circled, intent on studying each other's strengths and weaknesses. Tall Bull, with the advantage of size and weight, struck first. His tomahawk flew in a roundhouse swing. Preacher lively sprang out of the way. Instantly, he retaliated with a flick of his left wrist. The keen edge of his Green River knife bit into the flesh over the left eye of Tall Bull. In the instant of hesitation that caused, Preacher lashed out with his warhawk and lightly nicked Tall Bull over the left hip bone. A heavy stream of blood flowed down the Blackfoot's leg. Tall Bull flexed his knees and coiled his body for another attack. He came in straight, tomahawk whirring in a silvery blur before his face. Knife held with the edge up, Tall Bull feinted for the proper opening and drove the blade forward. Preacher jumped high in the air and brought his hawk down on the haft of the one in the hand of his adversary. Sharp pain radiated up the arm of Tall Bull, and he nearly dropped his tomahawk. Then he shifted his weight and spun in a full circle. Tall Bull swung his knife with all his force. The The stroke split Preacher's buckskin shirt from his left hip to his right shoulder. A thin ribbon of blood oozed from the chest of Preacher. Off balance from his effort to avoid the deadly steel, he stumbled over his own feet. Tallbull charged forward and sank the sharp edge of his tomahawk into the thick muscle of Preacher's upper chest. By immediately going slack, the blade did not cut through bone or pierce a lung. Preacher hastily rolled to one side. He recovered before Tallbull could follow up his advantage. Panther quick, Preacher smacked the Cheyenne in the gut with the flat of his blade. Tallbull doubled over. Preacher sacrificed a chance to get in another blow to return to his feet. Slowly, a plan began to form in his mind. Swinging rapidly in a figure eight, Preacher made the blade of his hawk a continuous blur between them. Inexorably, he edged Tallbull backward toward a large old tree. Eyes fixed over the shoulder of Tallbull, Preacher gauged his distance. When he had the Blackfoot in the proper position, he feinted to his left, then whirled right and ran around the slower-moving Tallbull. Seeing an opening, Tallbull rushed in. His arm raised above his head, he was prepared to split Preacher's skull. The moment his opponent committed himself to the blow, Preacher dropped flat on the ground. Unable to arrest his motion, Tallbull buried his tomahawk in the tree trunk up to the haft. Swiftly, Preacher cut a line across the exposed belly of Tallbull, which released a river of blood. Tallbull struggled to free his weapon from the wood. Suddenly aware that Preacher was on the way up, momentary panic seized him. Unable to free his warhawk, Tallbull abandoned it for his knife, which he changed to his right hand. Making a shrewd surmise, Preacher tossed away his own hawk and shifted to his Green River. He stepped in and began to circle. Awkward and uncertain, his reservoir of cunning and strength bleeding out through his wounds, Tallbull did likewise. Steel clashed on steel as Preacher parried an overhand thrust. Both men danced back and circled again. At last, Tallbull sensed a flaw in Preacher's defense. He lunged forward on his right leg and drove the tip of the blade toward Preacher's belly. All at once, the knife in Preacher's hand showed up where it should not be. It deflected the blade of Tallbull as Preacher spun away out of danger. The loss of his target sent Tallbull stumbling to one side, bent over and vulnerable. Preacher immediately took advantage. Preacher's kick caught Tallbull in the side of the head. Instantly groggy, Tallbull momentarily lost sight of his opponent. Seizing his chance, Preacher dove in and made a quick slash that cut the throat of Tallbull. Frowning, Swift Bear stepped forward to clasp forearms with Preacher.
You have won fairly, White Ghost. Take your friend, your weapons, and your horses, and ride out in peace. You will not be harmed.
Preacher and Antoine made the return trip to the fort in a day and a half. They paused only to dress Preacher's wounds and to rest their mounts. Preacher had grown feverish by the time they came in sight of the partly erected palisade. He rejected the suggestion made by Captain Drayling that he see Major Cochlan. Like most mountain men, he was wary of the medical profession.
You never hear a pill roller say he's doing medicine. They're all the time talking about practicing. Says to me they ain't got it right yet.
Preacher sent Antoine Revier and Three Sleeps Norris to find some special moss, leaves, and spider webs. When Eve Billings heard of his condition, she came at once to the lean-to where Preacher lay. His forehead was dew slick with perspiration, and he had sunk into an uneasy sleep. His dry lips cracked and parted. Eve knelt at his side and dabbed his mouth with a water-soaked cloth. By that time, his companions had returned with their shopping list filled. Eve looked up at him.
Why didn't he go to the army doctor?
Stubborn fool won't have no truck with a doctor. Says a Cheyenne medicine man can cure a fella faster, and a shaman won't cut anything off.
Secretly, Eve agreed. She saw as hopelessly medieval the popular assumption that amputation was the solution for nearly everything that would not respond to bleeding. Yet Preacher obviously had an infection. The inflamed skin around the wound, the steady ooze of yellow matter from the broken scab, pointed to no other possibility.
We brought the things Preacher wanted.
Antoine Revier offered the reed basket to E for her inspection.
Do you know how to mix these?
Yes, ma'am, more or less at ease. If Preacher was awake, he'd know the exact amount. We'll just add a dab of this and a drop of that until the pus starts to come out of that wound.
I am awake, goddammit. How am I supposed to be delirious through all this gabbing? Pay attention before my brain goes away again.
Preacher went on to give him the proportions of each ingredient. Antoine mixed them while Eve hovered over Preacher. Then he poured a whiskey over Preacher's wound and scraped away all of the scab with his knife. Next came the poultice, which Antoine packed deeply into the cut. Finally, while Three Sleeps lifted Preacher's shoulder and Eve held his head, Antoine bound the wound with a folded strip of cheesecloth he had purchased off Hattie Honeycutt, then wrapped a thin, thoroughly wet strip of well-boiled buckskin over that.
There. That should start to draw right nicely by this evening. Tomorrow he'll be up and sassy as ever.
Are you sure?
By noontime, at least.
If you don't mind, I'll watch over him part of the evening. Give you two a rest?
Fine with me. I'm sure Preacher would rather wake up looking at your face instead of ours.
Regardless of the assurances given by Three Sleeps Norris, 3 days passed before Preacher awoke from his septic delirium and made conscious note of his surroundings. He forced a delighted smile, though too weak to sustain it long, when he found Eve Billings dutifully at his side, with a damp cloth ready to salve his fevered brow.
How long?
3 days. You were very sick.
Well, weren't nothing. Little bout of sweats is all.
You nearly burned up with fever. Dr. Coughlin wanted to bleed you. I told him I'd take a shotgun to him if he tried.
Old Army Sawbones is only good for one thing, making a feller worse off. Thank you for looking out for me, Eve. I'm much beholden.
No thanks needed. Call it a labor of love.
A week went by before Preacher walked abroad unaided in the fast-growing compound. The first floor of the headquarters had been completed, along with a long, low warehouse sort of building for the quartermaster. But the first building to go up, Antoine Revier had pointed out, had been the sutler's.
Here's some near-quality whiskey.
One whiskey's about all I think I can handle.
Très bien. Then let us go and get it now, before you change your mind, or your nurseman comes along and forbids it.
2 more weeks went by before Preacher pronounced himself as fit as before the fight. He watched the last of the split logs being hammered into place on the second floor roof of the headquarters. Somehow, panes of glass had survived the arduous trek to this promontory, and amateur glaziers were gingerly fitting filled sashes into the lower floor's windows. The front stockade had been completed. It consisted of a double palisade of foot-thick pine trunks. They were sharpened on the tops and had a 2-foot space of rammed earth between. Running the length of it, a 5-foot-deep battlement had been installed to provide for firing from the wall. The huge gates had been hung and now moved ponderously on thick iron hinges. Fully a third of the outer defenses extended along the west face. Some 10 feet inside the main gate, a pounded ramp of dirt and granite boulders provided access to a platform of the same material at the top. The battalion's 3-pound field piece could be hauled up there to give the covering fire. It stood now between a flagpole which had been erected in front of the headquarters building in a circle of whitewashed rocks. More of the chalky stones marked out the parade ground and walkways to and from the buildings.
Good God, Danvers must have these poor devils working day and night.
Yes, he does. I overheard some of the soldiers talking. They said the colonel was setting a record in minor infractions punishment. The men who break minor regulations receive extra duty details after retreat. Whatever that means.
I think that's when they fire off the little cannon and haul down the flag.
Oh, yes. But why do they call it retreat? Isn't that running from the enemy?
Same words, different meanings. That's the army for you.
You coming to supper tonight?
A team of a dozen mules could not keep me away.
Something had gone decidedly wrong with the alliance between the Blackfoot Cheyenne and Sioux, as it often did in such meldings of one-time enemies. The Cheyenne had been slow in coming in. Three large bands, including that of Cloud Blanket, had refused to join at all. The Sioux had sent only token numbers from the Brule, Oglala, and Teton sub-tribes. Notable among those absent were the members of Red Cloud's band. As a result, the planned Great Uprising did not happen on schedule. Iron Shirt decided to take out his frustration and anger on the nearest white folks. Accordingly, he stormed into the lodge occupied by Prager, Gross, and Riker. He studied them in silence a moment, smelling their sudden outbreak of fear.
Where are the wagons of rifles? Where's the powder?
On the way, Iron Shirt.
That is not good enough. This war cannot begin without the weapons you promised. When will they be here?
I don't know any more than you do. Besides, the other tribes have not come in as you expected. When the warriors get here, the guns will be here too. What you need is another show of big medicine, and I think I might have just the thing.
What is that?
Give me time to get everything rigged up. Then, tonight at the dances, tell everyone that you are going to do a most potent dance. A spirit dance that will do wondrous things, like nothing they have ever seen. Use the dance you worked out last month, the one you were going to use as a victory dance when the white soldiers were destroyed.
What is it I am going to make happen?
Tell them that you will make stars rise from the ground up into the sky.
Can I do that? I mean, what are you going to do to make it happen?
Wait and see. I promise you, it might even have you pissing your loincloth.
Prager and his associates, along with Sowers and three henchmen, spent the rest of the day well beyond the large encampment of Blackfoot, Cheyenne, and Sioux. They had the last tube in play shortly before dark. Prager headed for the rear of one wagon.
We'll fix something to eat out here. No sense in going back and drawing attention to ourselves, then having to come back after dark. Someone might follow and spoil the whole show.
Sowers had an appreciative smile on his face.
You got it all figured out, Mr. Prager. Those engines will think the world's come to an end, sure enough.
Now, we do not want to terrify them into running away. This exercise is merely for the purpose of reinforcing the magical powers of our great prophet, Iron Shirt.
Still, it was inspired of you to have ordered these pyrotechnics and have had them shipped out here.
We'll soon see, won't we?
2 hours after darkness fell, Quentin Prager roused himself.
Better get ready. That's the drumbeat for Iron Shirt's fancy dance. It'll take about 20 minutes, then we let go the first shell.
When the time came, Prager touched the glowing tip of a length of slow match to a short fuse near the bottom of a thick paper tube. By then, the second star shell was on its way. Most of the fireworks Prager had arranged consisted of 3-pound starbursts. For the finale, he had something special.
Woo-hoo! That'll have them savages dribbling in their drawers for certain sure. What a hell of a show, Mr. Prager.
Those in the camp didn't exactly share the enthusiasm of Blake Sowers. Unable to contain them, guards stood helplessly by while the pony herd stampeded. Many of the warriors abandoned their immense pride to hide, shivering under their bison robes. Some fell to the ground, stupefied in superstitious veneration. Shaken to his core by the dreadful display, Iron Shirt had no word for those who gradually came to reaffirm their allegiance. He could only grip their forearms and nod and mumble. The cold, analytical part of his mind eventually asserted itself, though. Whatever the white men had done, it had restored his power over these fractious tribes. He turned, smiling, to his most trusted subordinates, Two Moons and Bent Trees.
Trust me, my friends. With this great medicine, the mighty battle really will come.
Preacher had become downright itchy-footed. Another week had gone by and still no major attack by the hostiles. Now, there had been some skirmishes against wood and water details, though. The fellas had been shot at from a distance, and the newly erected sawmill had been thoroughly riddled with 54 caliber balls on two occasions. Preacher considered the damming of the swift little creek and the locating of the mill on its banks below the obstruction to be the height of stupidity.
Phew! Even dumber than building this fort out where it's exposed to everything.
At least one of his worries seemed to have somewhat worked its way to a solution. Every day, more of the pilgrims settled in to rest and wait out the year at the fort. Spring, they declared, would suit them fine to move on. They had listened to Preacher's tales and those of his companions about winter in the high country. Not a one among them felt hardy enough to endure exposure to the elements in wagon boxes. Well and good, Preacher figured. It gave him more time to ponder on why the Blackfoot and their allies had not attacked in force. An exception to the settling down of the immigrants was the subtle campaign still waged by Eve Billings and Isaac Warner to get Preacher to commit to leading them through the wilderness. It manifested itself again that evening at a supper presided over by Eve and Rebecca Warner. After a satisfying meal featuring roast venison, Isaac Warner sopped the last of a rich brown gravy from his plate with a delicate yeast-raised bread roll. Then he leaned back and patted his fledgling pot belly.
Yes, sir. I've come to see spring is the ideal time to move on. We can learn a lot in the meantime, and the animals will certainly be more fit.
Couldn't do a better thing. By then, it might be this fuss with the engines will be over.
Only one thing is left undone, then. We will still be in need of a guide. Competent scouts, that sort of a thing.
Well, when word gets around about this fort, there'll be all sorts of folks drop by. You can find someone easy.
Fact of the matter is, myself and the committee are set on it being you. And possibly your friends, Revier and Morris.
Nope, nope, nope. Ain't possible. Soon as this engine ruckus is over with, I'm on my way to the Shining Mountains.
We can pay well. If not all in advance, then when we reach the Oregon country.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Warner. I ain't in the guide business. I leave that to them that enjoys it.
Preacher walked away. Eve excused herself and quickly followed.
Preacher, for the life of me, I don't know what you have against leading us to the Northwest. Mr. Warner said we would pay you well. Forgive me for being far too bold, but let me tell you this. Along with the monetary reward we can give you, there can be other, more pleasant rewards, if you agree.
Eve. Oh, Eve, what's a body to do? By God, the truth is I'd plow and plant a garden for one of your smiles. For a kiss, I'd do handsprings from here to the Grand Felons. And if I heard you just right, just now, for that, I'd take on those Blackfoot single-handed and whoop them all. But I can't. I won't let myself be harnessed up and put in charge of a wagon train. I'm sorry. I know I'll regret it tomorrow. Only it's just the way I am.
That's the longest, most eloquent speech I've ever heard you make. I'm sorry over your stubborn refusal, but I think I can understand. You've always been a free soul. Any sort of harness, and I'm afraid that includes matrimony, would only chafe. But now that I've said it, Preacher dear, the offer remains open. Good night.
Five double hands of Lakota warriors had set up a camp near their Cheyenne cousins. In spite of their earlier promises, they had failed to join with the Blackfoot for a large raid on the soldier place. Iron Shirt went to visit him, his patience at an end. They welcomed him warmly enough, and after the customary meal, got down to serious talking. Spotted Horse, the Lakota's war chief, started the conversation.
We are coming. It has been decided, and we will be there.
Yes, but when?
When we get there. Why are you in such haste, Iron Shirt? Going to war requires deliberation and careful planning.
The planning is done. There is nothing difficult about it. We must not let this soldier place be built. Like all white men, once they come, they never leave. Do you all want your bison killed? The soldiers will do that. They shoot them for trophies. As you know, I have 3 tame white men in my village. They tell me this is a true thing.
I have been told they scratch the ground, tear up the grass to put in seed.
Yes, they plant for food, like the Navajo. We must attack this evil place and burn it to the ground.
It is agreed. We will come at the next moon.
No! It must be now! We leave for the soldier place with tomorrow's sun. Meet us there.
For want of something to do, Preacher rode out with Lieutenant Judson of Company C the next morning on the water detail. The youthful officer, Preacher was willing to bet he didn't shave more than every other day, had matured considerably since their encounter with the Pawnee. Lines had appeared on his forehead and cheeks where none had been before. He didn't talk as loudly, nor move with nervous energy like a youngster in his teens anymore. Privately, he shared Preacher's opinion of the water situation. With construction nearly completed at the fort, he felt secure in bringing up the subject to the mountain man.
Our engineering officer, Major Vickers, has completed his test for building a cistern. I, for one, will be glad when we don't have to come out every day to water the horses. For some reason, I can't shake the feeling that Blackfoot eyes are watching my every move.
Now that outlook will keep you alive a whale of a lot longer than some others I can mention.
Colonel Danvers certainly does have an optimistic attitude. Not that I'm criticizing, of course.
It ain't for me to be bearing tales. Right now, I'm just an unemployed scout.
Then why do you take these risks like the others?
Keeps my edge keen. Fastest way to get yourself killed in the high lonesome is to take to thinking you're nice and safe all the time.
Is it really that wild out here, Preacher?
It is at times. In fact, there's three Cheyenne watching us now right up in them pines.
Preacher jutted his chin to indicate the direction of the observers.
I'd better alert the others.
Oh, now, I wouldn't get all stirred up and make them think we're the hostiles. If they had any thought to lift our hair, they'd not let me get an eye on them.
How can you be so sure?
I ain't, but I just never seen warriors sit their horses right quiet like that and then attack.
What should I do then?
We'll just mosey right slow along the creek. Tell the water in detail as we go. No hurry. Them Cheyenne ain't gonna leave until after we do.
Half an hour later, the group made it safely back to the fort. Judson reported their discovery to the battalion sergeant major upon their return. BSM Muldoon doubled the number of the second detail to take horses out for water.
Sinjin's now, is it?
Muldoon developed a faraway look in his blue eyes. With a limited supply of old John Barleycorn, his nose had lost much of its ruddy glow. He'd leaned down some, too. Preacher noted the changes approvingly. Fat might be all right for a politician, but a man on the spare side moves a hell of a lot faster in a fight.
Three Cheyenne. One of them was a mere boy.
But Mr. Judson said he never laid an eye on them.
Well, I saw them, and that's all that mattered, Muldoon.
Right you are, Preacher.
Judson said the engineer's about ready to blast out a cistern.
Ah, that he is. Oh, but my Uncle Hamish. They're going at it backward as usual. What I mean is, what are we going to do with all these winders in place? One mistake in the amount of blasting powder and we'll have glass flying all the inside of this room. You ever see how fast a chunk of rock moves with a big bang behind it, eh?
Yeah, you got a point. All you can hope for is none of them powder men has got three thumbs.
You going out with a new detail?
No, I've had an invite to take Noonan with Eve Billings. She promised me something special.
Ah, sure, and you've the sound of a man that's already been caught.
Not in the least. I've been alone on my own for too many years to change my ways now.
Bored by the lack of something destructive to do, Blake Sowers and three of his henchmen decided to pay a little visit to the sutler's store at the new fort. They had a hankering to try out some of the whiskey the government-contracted civilian merchant had in stock. They rode inside the stockade shortly after noon the same day. They dismounted at a freshly built, raw, yellow pine tie rail and looped reins. With his accustomed swagger, Sowers led the way into the saloon side of the sutler's store. There, the first thing he saw was a large sign in bold black capital letters.
Hard liquor sales prohibited to enlisted and NCO personnel, officers and civilians only, by order of Lieutenant Colonel Danvers, commanded.
Sowers pointed it out to his subordinates.
Well, looky here. Aren't you glad you didn't sign on to wear one of those pretty blue uniforms?
Pete Price leaned toward Blake Sowers.
I bet you we find out who thought up putting this place on a finger of rock.
Well now, seeing as how none of you gentlemen are soldiers, step right up and enjoy a drink.
While the four outlaws settled themselves at the barkeep poured whiskey into large fisheye shot glasses. With a deft flick of his wrist, he distributed them to his new customers.
You're new here, so the first round is on the house.
Now that's mighty nice. Much obliged, my good man.
Of course, the next one will cost you double.
Ha! Sounds like a place I know of down in the French Quarter of New Orleans.
Preacher entered the saloon. He came up short on the threshold and eyed the strangers with immediate suspicion. To the best of his knowledge, there wasn't a white man within 200 miles. Except, of course, the ones rumored to be with Iron Shirt. Preacher broke his momentary freeze and crossed the plank floor to the far end of the bar. From there, he could keep an eye on all four hard-faced men. For their part, they wasted little time before turning cold, killer's eyes on Preacher.
You fellas is new around here. Might I ask what brings you to Fort Washington?
Recently, Danvers had grandiosely named his small compound after the father of his country.
You might ask, but you won't get any answers, so butt out!
Now, that's hardly the way to answer a polite question. Seeing as how I'm the unofficial welcoming committee and all, I only sought to make you feel at home.
We don't need a welcome. Who are you to be poking your nose into our business?
Folks call me Preacher.
Thoughts of the $1,000 in gold bonus for killing the mountain man named Preacher galvanized Blake Sowers. His hand sped to his sash and the butt of a 60-caliber pistol.
We got us $1,000, boys. Get him!
The four outlaws reached for iron. With his outside holsters, Preacher beat all four easily. A Walker Colt filled his right hand, and he had the hammer fallen before the speediest Pete Price could clear the barrel of his long single-shot pistol from his belt.
Oh my God, my leg!
Now Preacher had only three to contend with. Hot lead cut a painful path across the top of Preacher's left shoulder.
You son of a bitch!
Two left standing. Preacher went to one knee. The ball shattered the chimney of a wall-mounted coal oil lamp after it exited the back of the head of surly Eden Dillon, of course. Preacher cut his eyes to Blake Sowers, who had taken refuge behind the bar. Intent on making the perfect shot, Sowers did not recognize the dreadful image of the Grim Reaper crouched before him in the person of Preacher.
Ah, my arm!
Sowers propelled himself backward, fumbling left-handed with the pistol in his waistband. But then he was distracted as he stared at the black hole that formed the muzzle of Preacher's Walker Colt.
Damn unfriendly fellers, I'd say.
God, Preacher, you are faster than a scalded cat.
I've worked at it a mite. Now, they'll have me a beer. Gunfight makes me thirsty.
Three days later, Preacher awakened as usual an hour before dawn. He pulled on a long-sleeved flannel shirt against the morning chill and stretched out the kinks. He struck flint to steel, ignited the hat-sized fire he had laid out the previous night, and put on water to boil for coffee. By the pearly light of a peaceful dawn, he was working on a second cup. That was when the Blackfoot, Cheyenne, and Sioux attacked. Lieutenant Bryce had the water detail for the company horses. He kept in mind everything Preacher had told his friend, Tom Judson. For one thing, he never looked directly at anything in the shadows of the trees that grew along the gorges that formed the watershed for Goose Creek. Although he could not put a name to it, Bryce had a particularly active itch between his shoulder blades.
Look alive, men. Ready your weapons. I've got a bad feeling.
It came as no surprise to him when a few minutes later his roving gaze picked out feathers where there should be none. Neatly trimmed feathers at that. He ambled his horse around so that his back was to the engines. To his satisfaction, he saw every man had his hand near or on the sheepskin covers of his pistol's holster.
All right, men, do it now!
Bryce's own dragoon pistol came free, and he had the hammer back before the muzzle centered on the area where the feathers had been before.
Fire! Back to the fort at the double!
With exceptional skill, the platoon had the entire company's horses on the move and up and out of the creek bed before the hidden Blackfoot could recover from the blazing curtain of lead delivered by the dragoons. But they came on soon enough. All of the engines broke from concealment and splashed across the creek. The sudden, unexpected conflict triggered a premature opening to the battle. While the dragoons raced for a small sally point near the corral inside the stockade, a long line of Blackfoot warriors whipped their horses to a gallop on the long, steep slope beyond the fort to the west. Fully 100 Blackfoot warriors swept down the steep slope to the west of Fort Washington. An equal number of Cheyenne charged toward the main gate. Behind them loomed the Sioux. Frantically, the sentries labored to swing closed the gates. Dragoons on fatigue details dropped their brooms and pitchforks and ran for their hall carbines. Others spilled from their tents, drawing suspenders over their long-sleeved underwear. Half a dozen ran for the camp. Preacher made for his lean-to recover his rifles. Preacher saw three sleep snores headed in the same direction from their cook fire.
I knew they'd be coming.
Damn right, just a matter of time.
Sergeant Major Muldoon stood in the middle of the parade ground.
Companies A and D to the west wall. Companies B and C to the north wall. Get that cannon moving.
Dust boiled up inside the compound. Dragoons dashed back and forth, uncertain as to whether they should dismount and man the walls or form as skirmishers for a future counterattack. Gradually, the officers calmed and directed.
Hold your fire until they're well within range. Hold fast, men. Take careful aim. Ready? Fire!
A swath of lead balls flung 35 Cheyenne warriors from their saddles.
Reload! Take aim! Fire!
From the tree line north of the fort, Spotted Horse could hear the solid thuds when the high gate swung together. The soldiers would be protected now.
How foolish for a man to lock himself inside a small place to fight.
Only the clear, open plain suited a warrior's soul. Beyond him, on the narrow shelf that jutted out from the base of the foothills, the Cheyenne, led by Red Elk, raced toward where the soldiers waited.
The Cheyenne are brave and they fight well. Yet only our braves can match the ferocity of Blackfoot. How is it that we come to fight beside them? All because of the medicine of Iron Shirt.
Spotted Horse had seen with his own eyes men who died, even though they had been given the protection of Iron Shirt's medicine. He thought of the young hothead Red Cloud. He had maintained that the medicine was fake. He had agreed with Cloud Blanket of the Cheyenne. Strangely, the elders agreed and stayed out of this fight. He himself had only changed his mind at the last minute. Spotted Horse readied his pony. Their time would come soon. Red Elk pushed his pony to a full gallop and raised the new rifle given to him by Iron Shirt. Red Elk saw a white soldier rear up and fall back. Maybe they had a chance after all. It would be their job to keep the Bluecoats busy while their cousins, the Lakota, rushed forward and scaled the wall. It was such a strange way to fight, yet Iron Shirt had assured them all that it had come to him in a dream. One small thing nagged at him. Blackfoot had been their enemy since their grandfather's times. Why were they sharing their medicine with him now? He would soon see how it worked, that was certain. From his vantage point inside the fort, Battalion Sergeant Major Muldoon could see little of the hostiles. Here and there, feathers and painted faces revealed frantic action beyond the walls. Farther back, more ranks of savages could be seen on the slope that overlooked the fort. He turned to the young headquarters lieutenant next to him.
Sure, and it's just like Preacher said it would be. The even devils had got themselves up on that hillside and can look right down in here. If they knew a jot about artillery, we'd all be dead.
Tightening of jaw muscles gave a clear indication of the effect of those words on the youthful subaltern. For all he knew, the engines might well have a battery of field pieces. So far, none of the savages they had engaged conducted their battles like engines were supposed to fight. For some reason, they were using standard military tactics. That made it downright scary.
Of course, when they're pressed too hard, they've always fallen back on their every man for himself ways and flung themselves at us with total disregard for their lives or those of their unit. That's when the advantage falls to us. You'll be seeing that here, I've no doubt, son.
BSM Muldoon touched the edge of the shiny black bill on his cap in salute.
If you'll excuse me, son, I must go and take a better look at what's making up. The darling colonel will need to know.
Light of 25 arrows slammed into the ground all around, the colorful fletching so many evil blossoms. Sergeant Muldoon didn't even flinch.
Ah, 'tis a fine day for a stroll through the flowers, it is. Keep firing at me, you redskin pups.
Not being paid to defend the fort, the immigrant men armed themselves and formed a protective screen around their portion of the inner compound. Not surprisingly, when the call for the men to rally had come, Charlie Billings had taken up his light rifle and started off. Eve caught her son by the scooped back of his overalls.
Where do you think you are going, young man?
They called for all the men to arm themselves.
That does not include 10-year-old boys. You could do your best service by staying here and reloading for me if the Indians get inside.
Oh, Mom!
No arguments. The matter is closed. Besides, I thought you'd like the idea of being an Indian.
That's different. These are bad Indians. Hostiles.
I want you to watch your sister in the meantime. And I think it would be wise for you to carry your rifle with you while you do.
Sure, Mom.
When Charlie and Anna departed for the soddy that had been built for the family, Eve lifted her eyes to the heavens.
Dear God, don't let anything happen to them.
Preacher and Three Sleeps reached a portion of the revetment over the gate before the Cheyenne came into range. Both shared in the dismay of the lieutenant. Never had they seen such control and order among charging hostiles. Someone had found a way to train them and make it stick, at least for the present. Pick off a couple of war leaders, and maybe things will change.
There's hundreds of them, Preacher.
You're right, Three Sleeps. More yet to come. You notice they're fighting like soldiers, too?
Yeah, and I don't like it.
Three Cheyenne had ridden well inside range. Preacher took aim on one, Three Sleeps sighted on another. The targets left the backs of their ponies for the spirit world. Quickly, the mountain men reloaded. Preacher found another target at about 40 yards. Some 25 yards from the stockade, an irregular line of broken rocks and fair-sized boulders had been left behind by the dragoons when the fort grounds had been cleared.
I told the colonel about those rocks. They'll hide a goddamn Cheyenne right enough.
Sure enough, Cheyenne braves who had ridden double slipped from behind their friends and took cover in the man-made barrier. An increased rate of fire from the west told Preacher the arrival of even more hostiles. He took a quick look over the parade ground and saw the 6 dragoons still trying to get the cannon in place.
Ain't any of those dummies ever heard of a horse? That's half a ton of metal they're trying to carry on their backs. A couple of horses would pull that gun up to the ramp in no time at all.
There's a right way and a wrong way.
Yeah, I know. The army way.
From the tree line, Preacher saw the distinctive marking of a Lakota on a warrior's shield.
And the Lakota got in this thing, too.
85 Lakota warriors, painted and ready for war, rode out of the trees. Three Sleeps saw a brown shoulder between 2 large rocks.
Don't get much nastier than this.
Right as rain, Pard. And I got a feeling it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Being senior by time and grade, Captain Drayling commanded the defenses over the main gate. He watched with even greater trepidation than Preacher when the Sioux showed themselves and began to charge down the length of the promontory. Protectively, the dragoons on the parapet had crouched down when the Cheyenne had taken positions in the rock and begun a sniping duel. Now he found himself forced to go along the double rank of defenders and whack rumps with the flat of a saber to get the troops up to fire at the new hostiles.
All right, ladies! This is not a quilting bee! Get loaded! Get up and prepare to fire by volley! The Sioux have come to pay us a visit!
By noon, 2 heavy concerted charges by the hostiles had been repulsed. Preacher munched on a wedge of cornbread, passed out by the women of the sheltering wagon train, and examined the powder-smeared faces of the young dragoons. To his relief and satisfaction, he saw only expressions of determination. They had gotten over their initial fear. Some of them had even gotten up a game of mumbly-peg. Now, if luck held, the Indians would not think of the concave wall to the east of this finger of land. Iron Shirt had lost his patience. That many warriors should have overrun the small number of soldiers long ago. They had followed orders well enough, at least until the volume of fire had rained down from those cursed walls and increased to a steady roar. Then they had forgot what they were supposed to do and went back to the old ways. He decided that a display of courage was needed. Taking up lance and rifle, he gathered his closest, most loyal followers and set out to lead the next attack.
We must take this fort before the sun goes to sleep in the west. We cannot fail. Do you see that small knoll? If we do not carry the walls this time, I will be on the top to make medicine and renew your spirits. One way or another, we will kill all the soldiers before darkness.
Revived, the Blackfoot, Cheyenne, and Sioux formed new lines and made ready to attack.
Ah, they're coming again! Dragoons, stand to your arms!
Battalion Sergeant Major Muldoon had worked through the noon hour. At his direction, 2 sets of compound pulleys had been rigged at the top of the pounded earth ramp. Muldoon strung ropes through them and attached one end of each piece to the carriage of a 3-pound cannon. The other ends he gave to the mounted dragoons.
Bend them around the pommels of your saddles, yeah? When I give the word, set off at a walk towards the stables.
But the stables ain't built yet, Sergeant Major.
One thing that had not changed during the journey here had been the woeful lack of intelligence on the part of Private Mallory. BSM Muldoon got right up in his face.
Oh, Mallory! Sure, and they're not gonna get built, you idiot, if we don't get this cannon into action and drive them hostiles off. Now do as I say, Sarah!
Wooden pulleys creaked and taut ropes thrummed as the weight of the cannon came on. Step by persistent step, the half-ton weapon rolled toward the base of the ramp. The lines vibrated wildly when the wheels started up on the incline. Then one cord, which had been exposed too long to sun and heavy dewfall, snapped. Like a whiplash, it hung through the air and viciously struck the rump of the horse ridden by Mallory.
Oh, baby Jesus!
Oh, damn your empty head, Mallory! You come 1,000 miles and you still can't keep your seat. Right, go and do something useful, Barbara. Harris, get over here with that horse and another rope.
With the addition of a competent man, the small field piece was quickly dragged into place. Quickly, the crew milled around it, rammed home a bag of powder, a wad, and a fist-sized ball. They all stepped back smartly and stood rigidly in a position of attention.
All right, lads, prick and prime!
A small round projectile flew through the air to burst 10 feet above a cluster of Blackfoot. Hot smoldering shrapnel slashed into them and their horses. It stunned to immobility fully 100 of the enemy. 7 of them died along with their horses. None of them had ever experienced anything like it.
Reload!
The gun crew stood back. Although Lieutenant Colonel Danvers thought it better to have one of the mountain men on each of the completed walls, Preacher did not agree. If left together, their disciplined fire and superb long-range marksmanship would have a devastating effect on the hostiles. Accordingly, he took 3 Sleeps Norris and Antoine Revier to the west wall, where the Blackfoot had concentrated. They began knocking riders from their horses at 70 yards. Perplexed, the Blackfoot soon gave evidence of their doubt. The medicine of Iron Shirt was failing. Only 25 of the 70 who were supposed to do so ran forward to throw braided horsehide ropes over the barricade. Almost at once, 3 of them stumbled and went down from the well-placed shots of Preacher and his companions.
They still got it in their heads that our bullets can't hurt them. We gotta make them think elsewise.
You know, once an engine's got something in his head, it takes Billy be damned to knock it out of there.
By then, 3 of the attackers had scaled to the top of the wall. Preacher reached out and smashed one in the head with the butt of his hawken.
Get off our goddamn wall!
With the 3rd cannon detonation, the tide turned. Fear raced through the hearts of the engines. The projectile killed 1 and wounded 7 Sioux, and a general exodus began. Warriors streamed from the field, eyes wild with open fear that not even their enormous pride could suppress. Within 10 minutes, not a single warrior remained within rifle range of Fort Washington.
Well, that looks like it put the fear of the Almighty into them for the time being. They'll be back. Maybe not today, but give them time to whoop up some more medicine. They'll be on our doorstep bright and early tomorrow.
As Preacher had predicted, dawn brought back the warriors, boiling with anger. After a night of medicine dances, their faith had been restored in Iron Shirt and his Iron Shield Society. They hurled themselves at the stockade with total disregard for personal safety. Braided horsehide lariat snaked over the pointed poles of the outer wall and found purchase on some.
They're coming up the wall!
Shoot them off!
Fire arrows joined the arsenal of the Blackfoot. Smoke and flame-tipped shafts shot over the palisade and into the fort. The frenzied hostiles drew back after the withering barrage of lead from the soldiers. The battle became a protracted exchange of gunfire. Using all the speed they could, the Blackfoot and their allies reloaded and fired at the men on the walls. Lieutenant Colonel Danvers called together the company commanders of Company A and D.
We can sweep them from in front of the gate with a counterattack.
You think that's wise, sir? Once we're exposed, the massive force of the West could flank us and roll us up right smartly.
Mr. Preacher assured me that when something went wrong for the savages, they would break off an assault and scatter. I'm confident they will do the same now.
Yes, sir, but haven't you noticed they're fighting in a disciplined manner for once? It's as though someone has introduced them to tactical concepts. If that's the case, they will attack.
We need to find that out, don't we, Commander Ford? Prepare your companies for a counterattack, gentlemen. The gun crew has come up with grapeshot loads from 54 caliber balls we have in reserve. We can cover you with a cannon.
Yes, sir. Would you prefer we use sabers, sir?
Yes, Commander, I think so. Leave your carbines behind.
It had been a facetious offer, and the response took Gordon by surprise.
But the holes offer us our best firepower.
Your men cannot hold both in their hands at the same time. You'd only get off two shots at best.
Danvers turned and walked away. 10 minutes later, Sally Ford swung open, and the two companies charged out and around the flank of the Cheyenne in Sioux positions. Sabers gleamed in the sun as they descended on the unsuspecting hostiles. Only a few reared upward and fired their rifles at the fast-approaching dragoons. Pistols barked, and those who resisted died where they stood. Keen edges flashed deadly light as the dragoons hacked and slashed their way through the massive forces of engines. Faster than Commander Borden imagined, the flank turned back on itself, and engines fell to both sides, wounded or dead. Word of the attack raced through the warriors. It took little time to rally the Blackfoot to come to the aid of their allies. By that time, the Dragoon's charge had come level with the main gate. The Blackfoot swarmed around the corner of the stockade and rushed toward the soldiers. Arrows and rifle balls flew toward the mounted troops. Still they prevailed. Commander Borden raised his saber above his head.
Turn him out! To the rear! Ho!
Back through the disorganized hostiles they rode. More of the Cheyenne and Sioux suffered from the pistols and blades in the hands of the dragoons. Ahead of them, the sally port swung open and the troops streamed in. Fighting dragged on into the afternoon. Preacher offered his opinion of the counterattack.
They done lost 8 dragoons, killed another 11 wounded. Damn waste of time, I'd say.
Around 3 o'clock, nature intervened to disrupt the plans of Iron Shirt. Huge towers of black thunderclouds billowed up in the northwest. They moved swiftly across the Bighorns. The first sheet of rain swept over the finger of land toward Fort Washington at 3:10. Visibility shrank to mere feet. A 3-pounder became inoperative. Already short on ammunition, the hostiles hunkered in the chilly deluge and engaged in only desultory return fire. Another benefit, the way Preacher saw it, the drenchers softened the bowstrings of the warriors, which rendered them useless. Silently, they began to stream away from the walls of Fort Washington. Disappointed in this reversal, the Blackfoot, Cheyenne, and Sioux did not even cast glances back at their relieved enemy.
Anna! Anna! Charlie, have you seen Anna anywhere?
No, Mom. Where was she?
I don't know. I left her at the cave with you. When the storm came up, I thought she would surely stay.
She's not here now.
Eve Billings saw a Preacher on the wall and hurried to the stairs that led upward. Before it creased her brow and she approached the mountain man.
Preacher! Preacher, Anna is missing. I can't find her anywhere.
We'll look.
20 minutes later, every corner and nook of the fort had been searched without results. Preacher brought Eve the bad news.
I don't know how or why, but somehow Anna's gotten out of the fort.
Oh my God, you have to find her.
I'll do everything I can, don't you worry. It may take a while, but I'll turn over the mountains to find her.
Not until Preacher passed well beyond the ground churned up by the engines did he find any sign of Anna Billings. He suspected that she had become terrified of the constant fighting, and later the crackle of lightning and the boom of thunder. Somehow, in the midst of the furious storm, she had managed to slip away. A small door in the sally port had been found partly open. It stood to reason that the 8-year-old had drawn the latch and left the fort by that means. Preacher's major concern centered around the very good chance that she had been seen by some of the stragglers amongst the engines and taken captive. He found it encouraging when he came upon her small shoe prints in the mud at a right angle to the direction traveled by the retreating hostiles. It didn't eliminate the possibility of her capture. She could have escaped from her captors. If so, they would be coming after her. He slowly followed her sign. The creature quickly recognized the terrain. Her trail led down into the valley where Goose Creek ran through, made swift and turbulent by the dam and water wheel. Creature swung Thunder northward to stay with her steps as they led toward the mill. He surmised that the small building there had been her goal. Ahead of him now, he thought he saw a frilly lace-trimmed collar, flaxen head. He urged Thunder to a faster pace. Satisfaction glowed in Creature's chest when he pushed through the tall grass and saw Anna on the bank of the treacherous stream. Calmly, she went about unlacing her shoes. She was going to cross, Creature realized. Creek Hank looked insubstantial and slippery. Yeah! Anna looked up wide-eyed. Unable to recognize Creature in the low light from the overcast sky, she saw only a huge horse looming over her, and she panicked.
Anna! Hold on! I'm coming!
Creature took time only to shuck his heavy holsters and Walker Colts, his hat and moccasins. Then he dove into the roiling water. Anna's hair formed a dim halo on the surface as she was whirled away.
Get on your back! Try to float!
I can't! My chest pulls me down! Please! Please help me!
Creature drew close with powerful strokes.
Take off your dress!
I can't! I don't have a medic belt!
Creature was barely over an arm's length from her now.
Do it anyway, girl! That thing could suck you under for good.
Small fingers tugging at the stubborn buttons. Anna undid her dress far enough to allow its sodden weight to drag it free from her body. Two more strokes and Preacher reached her. He slid an arm under both of hers and across her bare chest.
Now we gotta get out of this current.
One-armed, he pulled at the turbulent water at an oblique angle to that of the stream. Soon came hard work. Creature strained until the cords in his neck stood out like whitened ropes. To his gratitude, Anna didn't try to fight the water. He noted progress when a large rock flashed past. Creature recognized its shape and knew it to be close to the nearside bank. A few more stout pulls, legs scissoring to provide thrust. Creature felt mud and sand beneath his toes. He stood upright. Creature sized up their situation. Anna clung to him like a monkey. Staggered by the rush of water and his burden, Creature made unsteady progress to a bar of pebbles and sand that extended into the creek. Once there, put the girl down.
You've only one shoe. Best you take it off instead of limping.
Thank you, Creature. You saved me.
It was me scared you into the creek in the first place.
Did your horse run away?
No, he'll stay where I dropped the reins. We best be moving. Get you a blanket.
After they found Thunder and had Anna wrapped warmly, Preacher handed her up onto the back of his horse, then mounted behind her. The girl gave not even a single backward glance at the stream that had come so close to claiming her life. On the way, Preacher swung Thunder down into a gully to keep off the skyline. They rounded a bend in the ancient eroded riverbed, came face to face with five grim-visaged Cheyenne warriors.
Uh-oh, little missy. Looks like we've jumped into a tad of trouble.
Preacher lifted Anna and shifted her to one side to put her behind him. Correctly reading Preacher's intention to fight, the Cheyenne raised their weapons. Preacher tensed and drew both of his Walker Colts. His intention was to weaken the Cheyenne enough to crash through him and make a run for it. The fight was about to begin. Then, at the last moment, an old warrior drifted down the shallow bank. He raised his right arm in a commanding gesture.
Hold! Do not attack this man. I know him well. He is a friend.
Oh, White Ghost. It seems that you are always helping little children.
Cloud Blanket. You look the same as when I last saw you.
Cloud Blanket turned in his saddle so the other Cheyenne could hear his words.
I made this man my brother when he rescued my little son and daughter from a bison stampede on our hunting grounds in a summer long ago.
I remember like it was yesterday.
Preacher, these men scout for my band. I am moving far to the east because of the unrest among our people.
If you're talking about the fight at the fort, I can understand. What's your fix on what's gotten the tribe so stirred up?
It is the doing of one man, Iron Shirt. I will come and talk about it with you over coffee.
I'd be honored.